And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, July 11, 2023. Human Rights Watch accuses Sudan's paramilitary group, Rapid Support Forces, of committing serious human rights violations in Darfur.
The killing of civilians at home while they were trying to flee, simultaneously, systemically burning houses and looting valuables, destroying food reserves.
And South Sudan's acting Minister of Foreign Affairs says the search for peace in Sudan will continue.
Normally, in such kind of situation, you know, you always welcome at the mediator any opinions of from any party, because it is also crucial to get the consent of all the parties all the time. So it is, and the peace itself is always a process, it is not an event.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan's Government of National Unity says it is unifying the various forces in the country into the National Army to avoid a return to violence ahead of the general elections next year. The Minister of Peacebuilding says the parties to the 2018 peace agreement are screening and unifying the forces to remove what he called negative elements who might obstruct free and fair elections in December. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has more from Juba.
Authorities in the Ruweng administrative area accused Sudan People Liberation Army in opposition, or SPLAIO, forces of attacking and killing seven people more than a week ago. The SPLAIO spokesman said their forces acted in self-defense. Stephen Parr Kwal is the South Sudan National Minister of Peacebuilding. Kwal says the parties to the 2018 revitalized peace agreement are addressing potential drivers of violence ahead of the 2024 general elections in the country.
We are unifying the forces to remove those negative elements of political violence. We are also embarking on dialogue with our people to remove the guns from their hands. We have also passed so many bills from the Council of Ministers. The election law of South Sudan will also be enacted. It is that law that will regulate the process.
Minister Kwal says the transitional government of national unity is also reconciling communities across South Sudan to immunize cases of violence in some parts of the country.
It is time to do peace, not talking about it. And it is a collective responsibility. Peace cannot be made by the government alone. The people want to make their own peace. And we need to heal the wounds of the conflicts that really engulf our country before and since independence. It is time for dialogues. That is the message I want to send to everybody.
The spokesperson of the UN mission in South Sudan says the security situation across some parts of South Sudan remains fragile. Linda Tom says the UN mission has deployed peacekeepers in the Upper Nile state's capital, Malakal, to prevent ethnic-related violence amongst internally displaced persons seeking shelter at UN-run camp in the town.
The UN mission in South Sudan continues to be concerned by reports of intercommunal violence in some parts of the country. For example, the situation in and around Malakal remains volatile, and in response to recent claims of mobilization in Upper Nile, we have done is that we have deployed additional peacekeepers in order to strengthen security in and around the protection of civilian site, but also in Malakal as a whole.
She called on the parties to the 2018 revitalized peace agreement to exercise restraints and do everything they can to support the peace deal. President Salva Kiir vowed last week not to return the country to conflict during his speech marking 12th independence of the country. For VOA News, I am Deng Aideng in Juba.
The Archbishop of the Metropolitan Catholic Archdiocese of Juba and Cardinal Designate Stephen Nameu says his appointment by Pope Francis is a sign that South Sudan is important to Vatican. Vatican official in South Sudan says the promotion of Nameu to a cardinal demonstrates the Holy See's appreciation of the people of South Sudan. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from the capital, Juba.
The appointment of the Archbishop of Juba expresses once more the closeness of Pope Francis to the South Sudanese people and his wish to open paths of reconciliation and peace. Congratulations, Archbishop.
Thank you.
That is Monsignor Ionet Paul, the Chargé d'Affaires at the Vatican Embassy in South Sudan, speaking to the press Monday in Juba about the appointment of Archbishop Stephen Nameu as a cardinal. Paul says Nameu will join the membership of a group of cardinals of the Catholic Church appointed by Pope Francis to serve as his advisors. Paul says Cardinal Designate Nameu will take the voices of South Sudanese closer to the Holy Father.
He was here a few months ago, and now with this appointment, he expresses once again that he is really engaged with the building of this country, and he has faith in the people of this country. The people of this country can make it.
Cardinal Designate Nameu says he never believed when the news of his appointment broke out.
I was shocked because there is no consultation, and I know that when the Holy Father speaks, you have to respond with the obedience. And so they say always, when Rome has spoken, no one can block it. So I am happy too for this appointment, because it is a way of again serving our church in a more higher way.
He says his appointment gives the church a new challenge to work on the efforts of peace in South Sudan.
And through this election, we are put to the spotlight. We remember vividly the 3rd to the 5th of the 7th of February, where we were again put at the spotlight. God loves us, and God would like to strengthen our church. This elevation is not elevation for a single person. It is elevation of the whole church. And so it is important for all of us to reflect this church elevated to this level.
The Holy Father is expected to hold a consistory for the creation of the new 21 cardinals later in September this year in Vatican. The new cardinals will gather in Rome just before a scheduled October meeting to be attended by representatives of Catholic Church from all over the world. Nameu is among three cardinals appointed in the latest list of the new cardinals from Cape Town, South Africa, and Tanzania. He becomes the second South Sudanese appointed by Vatican as designate cardinal. Cardinal Gabriel Zubeir Wako was appointed in 2003 by Pope John Paul II. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu reporting from the capital, Juba.
Still in Juba, South Sudan's acting foreign minister says President Salva Kiir and other leaders from the IGAD countries will continue with mediation efforts to end the violence in Sudan. Deng Dao Deng says, though the IGAD meeting that took place in Addis Ababa Monday did not achieve much, President Kiir and other leaders will not give up on Sudan.
Well, this was, there's no other official source in Khartoum other than the Sudan Embassy in Nairobi in Addis Ababa. They have expressed their concerns with regard to nature and the way the meeting was called. Normally, in such kind of situation, you know, you always welcome as the mediator any opinions of from any party, because it is also crucial to get the consent of all the parties all the time. So it is, and the peace itself is always a process. It is not an event. So what took place in Addis Ababa was the follow-up of the June 12th, the communique that was agreed in Djibouti by the head of states and government, and also follow up on the Quartet ministerial meeting on the 25th of May. So it is normal that any party can always express their opinion or their concern.
But the message that was coming from Addis Ababa is that the delegation from the military side is saying they are opposing the Kenyan president's role as the lead mediator.
Well, of course, it would be better for you to ask the chair of Quartet, but as far as we are concerned, this is a collective responsibility, and as we look forward, it is important to take note of concern of any of the parties. You know, it is normal. Even during our wars in South Sudan or elsewhere, any party can always say it has an objection on a certain situation. And what is going to always receive and see how that kind of concern can be addressed.
And how about the role that President Salva Kiir has been playing? How far has that reached? Is President Kiir still in contact with the Hemeti and Burhan?
Well, there are always steps and stages of consultation. During the eruption of conflict on the 15th of April, President Salva Kiir Mayardit took it upon himself to reach out to both the chairperson of Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and also he also reached to Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo as RSF leader. And he continued to do that until when the meeting in Djibouti was done. So currently now the role has been left for the IGAD. And President Salva will always play his role as one of the regional leaders of IGAD. Anytime when he's called upon, he always play his role as one of the leaders of IGAD in this particular region.
He did not attend yesterday's meeting. Was there any reason for that?
As you know, John Tanza, South Sudan, was celebrating the 12th anniversary of the independence of the Republic of South Sudan on the 9th of July. The 9th of July was now on Sunday, so it was put on Monday, and President Salva Kiir was having a lot of activities. You remember, when you have such kind of events, such kind of big day, there are a lot of activities, including opening, you know, some projects and some activities within the country. So His Excellency was engaged, but he was represented in the meeting by the special envoy, Dr. Benjamin Bolmel. He participated effectively in the Quartet meeting.
And just a final question here. The conflict in Sudan has affected a lot of the countries neighboring it, including South Sudan. How would you describe the impact of this war on the country?
The most important thing that we should not forget, the first impact is on Sudanese people, the population, the Sudanese nation. It has been affected by this unfortunate situation that befallen the Sudan. And of course, we as immediate neighbors, we are, you know, we have been affected in one way or another. It has been affected because we have a population in the Sudan. Our country has opened all the borders for the people who are running out of the current situation in the Sudan. But also, most importantly, South Sudan depends on our economic activities on Sudan and the neighboring countries. As you know, South Sudan is a landlocked country.
That's Deng Dao Deng, South Sudan's acting foreign minister. He spoke with me from Juba this past hour. Human Rights Watch has called on the International Criminal Court to investigate a series of attacks by Sudan's Rapid Support Forces, which have been locked in a three-month-old conflict with the country's army. Human Rights Watch says attacks on civilians in Darfur, including summary execution of at least 28 ethnic Masalit individuals and the killing and injury of numerous civilians on May 28, 2023. The group said the attacks could amount to crimes against humanity. VOA's Nabil Biagio spoke with Berlin-based Human Rights Watch researcher Mohammed Osman, who is calling on Sudan's warring parties, the army and RSF, to cease attacks on civilians and allow safe access for humanitarian aid.
The findings that we shared in the press release today is an outcome of a research trip we had in Eastern Chad early June, when we talk to those who managed to flee the fighting and the violence in West Darfur, in particular from Mestere, the town that we are addressing in the research, but as well people from other places, including Aginina. And the stories we just heard just throw you back to the early stages of the conflict in Darfur in terms of how these attacks were very coordinated, the level of mobilization of the rapid support forces and allied armed militias, the killing of civilians at homes while they were trying to flee, simultaneously, systemically burning houses and looting valuables, destroying food reserves. I mean, many of the people we talked to in Mestere, they mentioned in the aftermath, I mean, just seeing what was a home for over 40,000 people, you know, mostly from Masalit, just wiped out or, you know, virtually being destroyed. We have been seeing the violence in West Darfur for quite some time, since 2019. And I think it's really the time for the ICC, which already have an existing jurisdiction to investigate Darfur, with the referral of the UN Security Council, we urge them to look into the recent wave of violence in West Darfur in particular and investigate this crime.
The RSF has denied ethnic violence by their forces in Darfur, and the targeting of non-Arab peoples like the Masalit in West Darfur. We know that even the governor of West Darfur was kidnapped and killed. What do you think of their denial, and why do you think the RSF are the culprits here?
In the previous attacks in West Darfur that Human Rights Watch and other groups documented since 2019, there has been a significant role the RSF played in coordinating these attacks with the armed militias in the area. Witness accounts all established very clearly the RSF presence in terms of individuals, in terms of vehicles, in terms of the heavy weaponry being used. So definitely the role that the RSF is playing cannot be denied. So that's at one point. And I think the second point, in terms of the ethnic targeting, we end up seeing that most, if not all, of the people who were killed are from the Masalit non-Arab communities in Mestere, as well to a great extent as well in Aginina. Witnesses talked about attackers uttering racial slurs during the attack as well. So while there is an ethnic component in the violence, we would not want to reduce this to just say it's an intercommunal violence. I mean, this violence has been there for some time, has been largely also triggered by localized dynamics, but also the dynamics in Khartoum.
From the crimes you've documented, from your interviews with the victims and eyewitnesses, what categories do you think fall under the ICC purview and jurisdiction? Is it like crimes against humanity, war crimes, ethnic targeting? What are we talking about here?
So, I mean, one of the key things about the determination or characterization of international crimes, it's really about the evidence that you find and the pattern you establish. I mean, at the moment, we could not, you know, we do not preclude that the events in Mestere could form part of a larger trend of abuses in West Darfur. The evidence we have at the moment did not lead us to that conclusion. So we are going to continue the investigation to establish, you know, whether that fits, you know, in terms of, you know, ethnic cleansing or war crimes or crimes against humanity. I think the legal framework that is governing us, that the outbreak of the fighting, you know, there is an armed conflict in Sudan, and therefore many of the abuses could possibly be characterized as war crimes. And I think this is why the call for the ICC in particular to investigate, because they do have the authority, jurisdiction, and the resources to establish that in more of a credible manner.
What are your recommendations? What action are you advocating for?
So Darfur, for a very long time, and let's say in the last year, has been fallen off the attention of the international actors. And I think it's very urgent, you know, affected communities do not have the luxury of, you know, wait and see approach that the international community is still doing when it comes to Sudan. So yes, we are calling on the ICC to investigate, but we are also imploring on the United Nations Security Council and the Darfur panel of experts to take actions, from identifying the perpetrators, the most responsible of these abuses, and roll out targeted sanctions based on their mandate. We're definitely calling on the regional international actors to intervene to allow unfettered humanitarian access and assistance to those who remain in Darfur in particular, but also to increase the funding and the support to those who cross border to Chad, and they're still in Chad now. I talk about tens of thousands in Chad in the last month. So definitely what we wanted to see a regional and international coordinated action to make Darfur and the plight of Darfur is a priority in terms of civilian protection, in terms of accountability.
That was Mohammed Osman, Human Rights Watch researcher based in Berlin, Germany. He was speaking with my colleague Nabil Biagio. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, lawmakers in Lek State say they are being treated like children. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you do to conserve your energy when it is very hot outside?
I drink lots of cold water because it relaxes me. So immediately I become dehydrated or I feel hot. I take in more cold water, yes, and it makes me okay.
Well, I live around the beach, so on a hot day I just take a stroll on the shore wearing a light cloth so that I can feel the sea breeze around myself.
If it is hot, you have to make sure that you get somewhere where it is cool. You go and bathe. Those are normal things you have to do.
When I'm at my home, I undress. This is my home. I have a bedroom. My home is big. Why won't I undress?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Lawmakers at Lek State Transitional Legislative Assembly are calling on the state authorities to cooperate with the legislature to improve relations between the two branches of the state government. The MPs say they are not being recognized and their rights is being undermined by Lek State government. The governor of Lek State says he will work with the lawmakers to address their concerns. For VOA News, William Sande Mabor reports from Rumbek.
Speaking at the reopening of the Legislative Assembly, Ayen Menador, Lek State Deputy Speaker, told lawmakers that the three arms of the government are not working together. Ador says lawmakers feel neglected and undermined by the executive branch of the state government. Ador says she was not happy with the sitting arrangements during the celebration marking the 12th anniversary of the country's independence last week.
The challenge of our people is a very big challenge. Our people is not arranged very well. If we are there at the Freedom Square, you will just sit like a normal citizen. We are not recognized as legislators. From our previous protocol, in last year, if the governor sits, second seat will be the speaker. Third seat, it is deputy governor. Fourth seat is the deputy speaker. But that arrangement is not there at Freedom Square the day before yesterday.
Gumwil Nomabur, who represents Rumbek East County at Yaba constituency, also asked the state government to treat lawmakers with respect.
We are legislators. This house, Your Excellency, is the house of the people, the executive, the legislature, and judiciary. We need to work together as a team. When we work together, the state will run smoothly. And if there are some ignorance in the system of work, other things may happen. This is a polite government. We want to work together.
Nomabur says MPs at Lagos State Transitional Legislative Assembly are facing a lot of challenges. He appeals to the state governor to provide health insurance to lawmakers.
Some of our two members have just died because of no health services. You just feel sick. You go like an ox who have nobody to take it for veterinary treatment until you die. So we need also to consider this. These are the big people. They are elders. Some of us are your age mate. And some are even more than you. So we need also this problem of health insurance to be also allocated.
Lagos State Governor General Rintuen Mabor told the Deputy Speaker of Lagos State that his office has taken note of the complaints about protocol issues during the state government functions.
One thing here that you must know, when it comes to government, that I'm the head of the government, mind the competition with protocol Markham as the head of the government. Get this one very clear. So, Speaker, you bear with me. It's not a crime to make a decision, but I will be stick to my decision as a leader here, as the head of the government. I know free judiciary, free legislation, free executive, but where is the head? But don't discuss the decision. It's terrible sometimes, but I will be flexible. I will take note.
Governor Mabor threatens MPs to abide by his decisions or they should leave him alone. The officials made these remarks during the reopening of the Lagos State Transitional Legislative Assembly third session Tuesday in Rumbek. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabur reporting in Rumbek, Lagos State.
Kenyan Foreign Ministry today say the Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi will kick off his Africa tour a day late on Wednesday. The announcement came after Raisi and Kenyan President William Ruto did not appear for a scheduled news conference today. The visit to Kenya, Uganda, Zimbabwe marks the latest effort by the Islamic Republic to forge new alliances. The three-day trip will be the first by an Iranian president to Africa in 11 days. Kenya's foreign ministry said the trip was delayed to finalize memorandum of understanding the two countries are expected to sign to extend bilateral relations. Iran's official news agency says the head of a delegation that includes the foreign minister and business leaders, Iran has stepped up its effort in diplomacy in recent months to reduce its isolation and offset crippling sanctions imposed since the United States withdrew from the nuclear deal in 2018. Earlier this year, Iran restored ties with regional rivals like Saudi Arabia in June, and the country's president traveled to Latin America. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. When I leave you with Musa Juma and the song Sudan Mpya, which means New Sudan. We've been listening to Musa Juma and the song Sudan Mpya, which means New Sudan. I am your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Peter Hindley, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.